You got somebody appointed for that?
I just appointed myself.
You just appointed yourself. Okay. That sounds good. All right. Well, we're at our final session here. Thank you for the good feedback during the break. And let's just jump into kind of a different framework here of what's involved in harnessing our masculinity and in the way we think about and treat women. One of my favorite quotes is, "Civilization cannot exist where womanhood is not honored. The degree of honor given womanhood may well be the most accurate measure of a country's civilization." Now, given that, you have to ask yourself, well, how are we doing? Well, by most measures, we could certainly do a lot better. One of the things I find fascinating is that women struggle with low self-esteem more than men, and that when it comes to a person's femininity, that 3 out of every 4 women report they have struggles with their feelings of femininity and of attractiveness, while only 1 out of every 5 men do. And that's also true in the church. And I thought about that a lot. Why is there this gender gap in that regard? And I think a lot of it just has to do with a neglect of this basic command found in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7 that we're supposed to honor the woman. You honor God by honoring his word, and we honor his word by honoring the women around us. Years ago, I was thinking about this topic, and I penned this little limerick. Honoring is what puts the fun in together, the sad in apart, the hope for tomorrow, and the joy in a woman's heart. And if women were here today, they'd be saying, amen. And this is the part, though, that I find so fascinating as a man and as a husband. It is a neglected command in many cases. I remember growing up, probably for every 5 sermons that I heard on wives being subjection to your husbands, I heard 1 on husbands honor your wives. I do think that it's a neglected command. But here's the good news. And that is, if the husband can make his wife feel loved and honored, truly put her in a place where she's second only to God, if she feels cherished, most of the time the marriage will thrive. In fact, Gary Smalley says in his research and his books and things that if there's a problem in a marriage, most of the time he finds the problem is the man hasn't figured out how to properly love his wife. And if you can fix that, then the marriage usually improves dramatically. Now, that may seem unfair, but I pretty much found that to be true in my years of marriage counseling as well. So I almost always focus on the man and try to help him to see things from his wife's viewpoint so he can love her better, and she just will respond in an amazing way to a husband who truly loves her the way the Bible says that a husband should. Let's look at 1 Peter 3, and let's begin with verse 6. Let's get this in context. It says, "The woman should be like children of Sarah and look up to and respect their husbands, just like Sarah looked up to Abraham, calling him Lord." Now, the feminists among us find that demeaning. Nothing demeaning about this. This is just kind of looking up to your husband and sort of saying to sir with love. And in verse 7, he says, "Likewise, just as you want the wife to look up to you, you need to look up to your wife. And the husband likewise should live with their wives in an understanding way." I don't know about you, but I'm glad that verse doesn't say, "Husbands, understand your wives." I'm glad that's not what the text says. Men and women are so different, it's often difficult to always appreciate where the other's coming from. In fact, one writer said, there's only 2 times that a man doesn't understand his wife, before he marries her and afterwards. And I think there's a lot of truth in that as well. So what he's really saying here is, even when you don't understand why she's maybe so upset, be understanding of her and sensitive to her, since she is a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. So there are different roles in the relationship, but spiritually she's your equal. And if you don't obey this basic command of how you treat your wife, he says vertically you're going to impact your relationship with God. Your prayers will be hindered. This passage is really telling us that in God's plan, in ideal marriage, there ought to be a mutual admiration society going on. The wife looks up to the husband looks up to the wife. They sort of both put each other up on a pedestal. You know, you perform a wedding ceremony and you look at that bride and groom, and they're looking into each other's eyes with sort of disbelief and wonder, both feeling like, boy, I got better than I deserve. And if that's going on and you can maintain that, that's one of the real keys to a successful marriage. Yes, there are rules about authority and headship and submission in the home, but another set of rules overlapping and interwoven throughout a true biblical marriage is this attitude of honor. And truly being understanding and compassionate toward her. In other words, yes, you're to be the head of the house, but that doesn't mean that you're dictatorial. It doesn't mean that you are harsh as you bark out orders at her. Fellas, when your wife or the women in your life, maybe your mother, your sister, when they're hurting and frustrated and they have problems and they come to you, I guarantee you at that moment, they don't want your mouth. They don't want you to put on your Mr. Fix-It hat and give them some sort of logical syllogism as to why they shouldn't be so upset. As a young husband, I thought my wife wanted my help, right? And I used to do that, and I'd try to convince her she doesn't need to be so upset, and she'd say, stop minimizing my feelings. And I'd go, what? I didn't mean to be minimizing her feelings. I was just trying to give her advice. Most of the time when your wife is hurting, at that moment, she doesn't really want your advice. She wants you to hold her. She wants you to be empathic with her. She wants support, not solutions at the moment she's hurting. Now later, after things have calmed down, you can refer back to that incident where you sympathized with her and made her feel like you really understand and care. Then you can say, you know what, I've been thinking about that. That is upsetting. Have you thought about doing this? I mean, after the hurt, they're often very open to that kind of counsel and advice. But you don't want to answer feeling with cold, hard logic. You want to answer feeling with feeling. Otherwise, you're like two ships passing in the night. See, if your wife is hurting and she comes to you and all she feels is put down and she's sorry she came to you, after a while, she'll stop coming to you with her feelings and she'll shut down and she'll want to talk to somebody else instead of you. And that creates a barrier between you and your wife. What you want to do is emotionally connect and avoid those barriers. One of the most common things that men say to women is, why are you so upset? You are way too sensitive. Any of you guys said that? When you say that, the wife takes that as minimizing their feelings. They take that as a disrespectful judgment. And so what you need to do is to be really careful not to put down a woman for being sensitive, because she's made to be the nurturer. She is more intuitive than you are as a man. She's got these special gifts that make her especially good as a mother and as someone who nurses her babies. She is the weaker vessel. That's not a put down. It is simply a statement of how she is more emotionally sensitive, and you need to be aware of that as you go about leading your home. And a woman is really good about comforting a man when he is hurting and needs consoling, much more so than a man is converting or consoling, excuse me, another man. I'm really impressed with the story in Genesis chapter 24, where you can imagine the close relationship that Isaac had with his mother Sarah, who, of course, had Isaac born as her only begotten child of promise. She lives to be 127. She finally passes. And 3 years later, after his mother has died, the Bible says he's still mourning the death of his mom. He's about 40 years old. And it says in Genesis 24, verse 67, Rebekah became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So it was only being in the arms of Rebekah that enabled him to finally feel consoled and comforted. It's a special gift that God has given the woman. You know, when God looked down and saw Adam and that he was alone, and he said, that's not good that man should be alone, he could have solved that problem by giving Adam four brothers, right? He wouldn't have been alone anymore. But he didn't do that. He didn't give Adam four brothers. He gave him one wife to be the perfect counterpart to help him not feel lonely. So be really careful before you get frustrated and put your wife down for being too sensitive or emotional. That's one of the reasons why you were attracted to her to begin with, and it is one of her strengths that the woman has generally much more so than the man. The key in a marriage and with these gender differences is to learn to appreciate those differences as God-given and having value, and not to deprecate the other person because they are different than you. Gary Smalley, in his work, when he talks about these things, he says that a woman is like this beautiful butterfly that you love to have around, but butterflies pretty sensitive, and you better not knock them around very much or you're going to harm that beautiful butterfly. The man, he argues, on the other hand, is more like a buffalo, 40% more muscle mass than the typical woman, stronger by far than the typical woman, taller typically, bigger typically. And the example he gives is, if you were to take a bunch of pebbles and you were to throw it at a buffalo with this thick skin and this, you know, sort of fur, probably won't even notice that you've done anything to him. Buffaloes are not very sensitive, and they're this goal-striving mechanism. They get an idea in their head and they go for it. On the other hand, you could take a pebble or two and with a piece of scotch tape, you could tape it to its wings, and boy, you might even make it so it can hardly fly anymore. Just a little pebble. It's going to really notice something that the man may not even notice at all. And he says we need to treat our wives like beautiful butterflies and remember that sometimes if we're not careful, we can be sort of like a bull in a china shop. So you give honor unto the wife as the weaker vessel. One of the ways you do that is you understand that she craves being cherished. Men need more than anything else to be respected. But women need to be loved and cherished. So with rare exception, if your wife or girlfriend or mother is unhappy, it's often because the important men in their life have failed to properly honor and respect them. Few things will change the entire tone in your home more than for the men at home to bend over backwards to honor the women. This idea of the woman being more the nurturer and therefore more intuitive and more fragile can be indicated by an Old Testament word study. I find this fascinating. In the Old Testament, even the very words for the creation of man and woman indicates a woman is crafted by special design. But let's first notice the man. In Genesis 2:7, we are told that God formed man from the dust of the ground. This is a word which is used of forming clay pots and utensils in Scripture. So again, a man by his nature tends to be more sort of utilitarian. We're less complicated than our female counterpart. We really are. And we tend to be goal-striving mechanisms. And we can compartmentalize our feelings. While a woman tends to take her feelings and her logic, and they're all mixed up. It's hard to separate the feelings from the facts. I personally think that's why God put men in the leadership role. You're better at making those tough decisions when emotion is involved. On the other hand, what does it say about a woman? It says this word fashioned is an artistic term which is used later of the skilled craftsmen who fashioned the intricate items that were a part of the temple. Think of the woman who has that hourglass figure that we men find so attractive. I think I can say without contradiction that God gave man the greater physical desire, but woman the greater physical beauty. So she's fashioned out of the man's rib. The word is, the idea is that she's like a work of art. She's like a piece of Lenox crystal or Dresden china. And the Bible says, a worthy woman who can find her, for her price is far above rubies. Proverbs 31 and verse 10. I like to illustrate the differences this way. This is a $5 Tupperware plastic cup, glass, whatever, container. It does a really good job of holding lots of liquid. It's very utilitarian. If I were to take this and I were to toss it to one of you out in the audience, you could catch it. Nobody'd worry about it breaking because it's not fragile. This is sort of like the constitution of the typical man. Does he get the job done? Is he important? Does he have a role? Sure. But you would never put something like this up in a hutch with lights on it. You're never going to find this in Amanda's hutch, right, Jeff? Not going to happen. On the other hand, this is a much more expensive glass. I have something at home like this up in my wife's hutch. We got it as a wedding gift 42 years ago for $45. And it pings, means it's good quality. This is Jen's, by the way. I'll be careful not to break it. I'm not going to be tossing this out to anybody in the audience. Now, does this hold liquid? Sure it does. Not as much as this. So which one has more utility? This one. Which one is more expensive and valued? This one. And this is something that glistens when you put it up in the hutch and lights. It really deserves a place of honor. And God says, I've given you this wife who's fashioned as this fragile but beautiful person who just comes to life in an atmosphere of honor. And so if you will just honor her, not put her down, but honor her, you will find that she will respond to you in an amazing way that will help your marriage be all that God wants us to be. The most fragile pieces are the most expensive, and they're the ones that are given the place of honor. And so should it be in the home. John Chrysostom was an elder in the church at Constantinople, and he wrote in the 4th century. And his commentary on Paul's statement that we should love our wives like Christ loved the church is something I find quite fascinating. This is what he says here. He says, "Show her, husbands, that you value her company and prefer being at home to being out. Esteem her in the presence of your friends and children. Praise and show admiration for her good acts. And if she ever does anything foolish, advise her patiently," and I might add in private. You don't want to put her down and embarrass her in public. "Never call her by her name alone, but with terms of endearment, honor, and love. If you honor her, she won't need honor from others. She won't desire praise from others if she enjoys the praise that comes from you. Prefer her before all others, both for her beauty and her discernment. Above all, praise her." Human nature hasn't changed since Adam and Eve. This was true in the garden. This was true in Jesus' day. This was true in the 4th century. And this is true today. And this is a real important part of loving your wife like Christ loved the church. Nourish, honor, cherish her. Now, how do we practically carry this out? First of all, you need to tell her often, "Honey, I'm so fortunate to have you. You are special." I like to tell my wife, Gail, "You only bring unhappiness by your absence." And that's exactly right. You can't be like the guy who says, "Honey, I told you I loved you when we got married, and if I change my mind, I'll let you know." That doesn't work with a woman. She needs to be continually reinforced. She needs to be reassured. Her soul is nourished by continual affirmation of your affection for her. Some men, unfortunately, stand at the altar, and instead of saying, "I do," they say to themselves, "I'm done. I've wooed my wife. I proposed. She said yes. I now have this part of my to-do list done, and now I can go on and climb the corporate ladder and do the other things that I want to do with my life." Biggest problem in marriage is over time, people tend to take each other for granted. And love can be very powerful, but it's also something that can be very fragile, and it can go out unless it is sustained. A woman is like a fire. The flame will go out quickly if it's not attended to. It's not just on Valentine's Day and Mother's Day and her birthday that you show her that you care. After about 3 weeks, what you told her is gone in her psyche. She truly does need to be continually reinforced. And this sort of feedback from you can't be just isolated events with long periods of time where there's nothing but unfeeling kind of interactions. Affection and love needs to be the atmosphere in the home that sustains your love daily. And to do that, you need to be maybe creative. I had a fellow come up to me one time and say, "But Brother Hunter, I'm supposed to be truthful. I mean, what do I do if my wife comes up to me and says, 'Do you like my dress?' and I think it's ugly? I can't tell her I think it's ugly?" I said, "You know, you can do both. How about, honey, that dress isn't half as good looking as you are. See? You're being honest that that's not your favorite dress, but you're doing it in a way that affirms her as a person." Or you say, "That dress is okay, but I like what's in it a whole lot better." Tell her often and affirm her and value her at every chance you get. And tell others. Criticize in private, praise in public. In the company of others, say, "This is my wife. She's all mine." And tell your kids in front of her how much you value their mother. When my kids were at home, I would frequently, when we'd sit around the table and have our family devotion, I would tell them how blessed they are to have a full-time mom who was so devoted to them takes such good care of us and takes the time to make us such wonderful, nutritious, delicious meals. That was a true statement. And I think it was helpful that my girls, my two daughters, frequently heard me in my prayers thank the Lord for Gail. Let me ask you something. When's the last time in public prayer that you heard some of the men here at Kleinwood thank the Lord for the good women of this church and all the good that they do? I have no idea. Recent? That's great. Because a lot of times that tends to be overlooked. And the women wind up being unsung heroes. So what I'd like to encourage those of you who lead in public prayer to do is to make sure that as a regular part of what these wives hear, because they don't lead the prayers, is that they hear us thanking the Lord for them. I mean, where would a local church be without the women that provide the lion's share of the hospitality and the teaching so much in the younger age groups and do so many things behind the scenes that are so important? So make sure that you pray for your wife, and as a church, you value the women in a very responsible way. A real man is not someone who can win the hearts of many women over a lifetime, but one who can win the respect, passion, and love of one woman and keep it for the rest of her life. And one way you can do that is by following this admonition in 1 Peter 3. Dwell with her in an understanding way, as a weaker vessel, for she is a woman, and grant her honor as a joint heir of the grace of life. So, you may need to change your attitude. Sometimes men will make jokes about women drivers. Did you know that statistically, generally, women get less accidents than men? So why all the jokes about women drivers? And sometimes people talk about women being space cadets or flighty, and you've heard all about the dumb blonde jokes. Listen, if your wife is hearing you in some male chauvinistic way, constantly putting down the weaker sex, is she going to feel put up on a pedestal? I mean, if you're putting women down and she happens to be one of them, that's a problem. So you may have to look into your heart and change your attitude. And the words of praise I'm talking about have to be sincere. Solomon said that flattery is like a web into your feet. Woman will be able, because she tends to be intuitive, she knows the difference between a pickup line and something you say from the heart. 1 Peter 4 and verse 8, love covers a multitude of sins. The idea is love is willing to overlook imperfections. And so a part of one of the ways that you can change your attitude is because you love your wife, put a positive spin on what you may concede as a negative trait. She's not nosy. You ought to just see her as alert and sociable. She's not touchy. She's sensitive. And remember, that can be a good thing. She's not, maybe she's just thrifty. She's not too talkative. She's just expressive and dramatic. Do you know that in an average day, the typical woman speaks twice the number of words than the typical male? They're just made that way. They're more verbal. So no wonder men think women talk too much. They talk more than men. So what? Not too serious. Maybe she's sincere and earnest. She's not rigid. She's just disciplined and has strong convictions. She's not too fussy. She's just very organized and efficient. Here's the key. One of the ways you show your love is you give each other the benefit of the doubt and learn to see each other in the best light possible. Your kids are nosy. Mine are inquisitive. Did you know that? Isn't that interesting how when it comes to our own offspring, we tend to want to view them in the best light? It's one of the reasons why sometimes as a parent, it's hard to be objective about your own kids because you love them so much. And you ought to love your wife so much that you are going to look at some of these perceived negative traits in a way that is going to give her a lot of grace. And I think that's one of the ways you can honor them. And it's one of the ways you can keep yourself in love with her. And may I suggest that in the process of all of this, that you watch the nonverbal. Because the nonverbal frequently can be very hurtful. I remember years ago, I was preaching for the church in Tampa, the North Street Church, and one of the elders there, he and his wife were out to dinner with Gail and me. And this particular elder's wife, wonderful lady, but she used to kind of belabor her points a bit, and she was the type that would tell a joke, and then she'd pause, and then she'd tend to forget the punchline, and so when she talks, because she kind of talks slow, sometimes you'd want to give her help with what the next word is. You ever known someone that kind of has a little trouble coming up with the right words for things? Well, this particular woman was that way. And this particular night, she was having a problem in the conversation over dinner getting her point across. And she'd stop, and she couldn't quite think of the right word. And she looked over, and her husband was rolling his eyes about this, and she saw him rolling his eyes to me to see about her while she was talking. And she immediately stopped talking, and she got kind of teary-eyed. And she says, "I'm sorry, I'm a burden to you all in this conversation. Somebody else can talk." And it's just this cringeworthy moment. And I remember Gail picked up the conversation and said something. And so after dinner, we excused ourselves and we went to the men's room. And this was hard for me because I was an evangelist there and this is one of the elders. But we were good friends and I called him by name and I said, "Do you mind if I give you some feedback about what just happened over dinner?" He goes, "No, go right ahead." And I said, "You know, you really hurt your wife's feelings when you did that." He goes, "You mean just my rolling of the eyes like that?" I go, "Yeah, she almost came to tears." I said, "That was a disrespectful judgment of her. And you know, you took a vow to protect her, didn't you, in marriage? And now she's feeling like she needs protection from you in what was this nonverbal, disrespectful judgment in front of her friend. She was embarrassed." And he said something very interesting. He said, "Well, you know, I noticed you and Gail, when I get out to the table, I'll apologize to you and Gail." I said, "You don't need to apologize to us. Apologize to your wife. She's the one you hurt." And he says, "Oh, of course." A good man, but in this area, he was kind of clueless. And he went back to the table and he apologized to his wife, and she was very appreciative, and things got better after that. But I've seen in so many situations, people come to me for counseling, and there's this wall between the husband and wife. That's often why they're going for counseling. And oftentimes, the husband will learn to hate this wall between the two of them. And upon exploring why the wall is there, it's because the husband has been treating his wife in ways that she needs to put up the wall to protect herself from him. His angry outburst, his thoughtless barbs or whatever. That's the exact opposite of honoring your wife. And boy, it is so important that we be aware of this important element of honoring. Remember the nonverbal. And remember the importance of little acts of courtesy. It's often that the little things are the big things in relationships. That is especially true with women. John Gray, in his book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, talks about how men and women score points differently in marriage. And that is so true. That's a great chapter if you haven't had a chance to read that. And he talks about this very point, that little things aren't so little. The reason you hold a chair or allow a woman to go first or open the door for her isn't that she's incapable and she really needs that. It's that it's one of the ways that you are saying that she is valuable and important. It is treating her like a lady. Acts of chivalry is not the foolish remnant of Sir Walter Raleigh bygone days of chivalry, but the wise, perceptive solutions of the accumulated wisdom of mankind. I want you to go home and ask your wife, what do I do that causes you to feel particularly cherished or honored? I'm amazed at how, when I ask other women, what does your husband do to make you feel honored and loved? They almost always bring up little acts of courtesy. One woman said, he makes sure that every day he says, I love you. Another, frequently he brings me my coffee in bed. It's so sweet. Another said that when I talk to him, he just gives me rapt attention and really listens. Those are the types of things that women will say. Men will almost never say something like that. Years ago, I asked Gail, you know, what do I do that makes you to feel particularly honored? I was really curious because I was really trying to be a good husband. She thought about it. She said, you know, I feel the most honored when you stop on your way home from work and you bring me a cup of Dunkin' Donuts coffee. I think back then it cost $1.38, a small black coffee, which is what she wanted. I was disappointed. I said, are you kidding me? Out of all the things I do in the home, that's what you think about? She goes, well, I know it's a little out of your way, and I know that you're not particularly fond of coffee, but you know that I am, and when you surprise me with that, it just really makes me feel special. I thought maybe she'd say, I really appreciate how you work two jobs so I can stay at home and not have to work and be with the kids, which I love. You know, doesn't that count for anything? Well, yeah, it does. But what to a woman means so much are these little acts of kindness that we men tend to not value enough. Let me tell you a story about our relationship that illustrated this point really well. Typically, in a marriage, you'll say, I love you, and she says, I love you back, right? And we were a typical couple, and that's usually what would happen. And it sort of surprised me because all of a sudden, I would say, I love you, and Gail would say, I know you do. I'd say, okay. I love you. I know you do. And I think, how come she's not saying I love you back? And I wondered if maybe something went wrong because things seemed like they were great between us. So I finally asked her, I said, how come you don't say I love you back anymore? She goes, oh, of course, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to not say that. She goes, frankly, sometimes I think talk is cheap and you just sort of say I love you and it's just words. But she said, I can just tell by the way you treat me that you love me. And the nicest way I could express that to you is just to reaffirm when you say, I love you, to let you know I know you do. And I was like, I mean, so now I'd love to hear I know you do. Because between us, that's what she's saying. And frankly, in our very early years of marriage, there were times where she thought I was just saying it, but I wasn't treating her in the way that she felt loved. And that's the key. You want him to feel loved, right? And honor is such an important part of doing that. Before I talk about this word study, I want to just share one other thing and then we'll open it up for some discussion. About 25 years ago, when I was back in Tampa, I decided I wanted to preach on 1 Peter 3, 6, and 7, honor the woman. And I always announce my sermon topics in advance so people kind of know what's coming and they can invite visitors and that kind of thing. And so this was no exception. The Sunday before, I had announced that I was going to be preaching on honor the woman. So that whole week, I was studying for the lesson, and I was particularly thinking about it and really working hard on being especially attentive toward Gail. And so Saturday night, I noticed she was helping with the kids and doing some things. So I came in and I said, how you guys doing? I said, honey, you need any help? She goes, that is so nice of you to offer to help me like this, especially on a Saturday night. Usually you're just gone on Saturday nights because you're working on your sermon. And suddenly she got this look of recognition on her face. She goes, you're preaching on honor the woman tomorrow, aren't you? And I kind of sheepishly said, yes. And she said, you've been treating me like a queen all week long. She said, you need to preach on that more often. And I don't know how often I need to be preaching on the topic, but I do, as a husband, need to recognize that taking the time out to make sure you're being particularly kind and thoughtful and honoring your wife is the right thing to do, and it will pay huge dividends in your relationship. And it goes back to this word study. In the King James Version, it's God made her a helpmeet for the husband, the NAV, helper suitable. I like that a little better. But literally, in the Hebrew, the word means an answering to. So Adam had these needs that weren't being met, and the woman was made as the perfect counterpart, sort of the shadow of what he was not, so they fit together, both emotionally as well as physically. So the woman is the answering to the man. So literally, God made the woman to be the responder. The man is made first, and then the woman is made to respond, so the man's no longer lonely. And so she is most fulfilled when she is in a love relationship and both needs are being met. And you will find that she will respond to the way that she is being treated. That if the husband is feeling like the wife is being frigidaire, or really cold to him, and he's upset with that, usually he can look in the mirror and learn that she's pulling back from him because she feels like he's not treating her very well. How the wife is responding to the husband is usually just simply an indication of how the wife perceives she is treated. And if she knows she's second only to God in your book, And she's really secure in that in her heart, she will go to the ends of the earth for her man. She will be amazingly loyal to you. A prudent wife is a tremendous gift from Jehovah. God made them that way. But on the other hand, if you ignore her, you criticize her, you demean her, hell knows no fury like a woman scorned. And when I first read in Gary Smalley's book, If Only He Knew, that if there's a problem in the marriage, it's usually the man's fault because the man hasn't figured out how to love his wife, my first reaction to that was, man, that seems so unfair. Why are you going to put this all on me? And initially, I didn't like that. I just chafed at that. But then later on, I sort of got a big smile on my face, and I thought, if that's really true, and I want a great marriage, then, hey, all I have to do is to figure out how I can be the husband I need to be, and I can change me. You can't change the other person very well, but you can change yourself. And if she'll just respond to that, then, you know, we men like control, right? Well, I guess in that sense, I can have control over this. And 99% of the time, I think there are an occasional exception, but 99% of the time, if you can just figure out how to really make her feel loved, honored, and cherished, second only to God, and she can get to the point where you say, I love you, and she says, I know you do, she'll be the wife of your dreams. I mean, that's why I wanted to end with this. I mean, some people act like this is kind of being a wuss. No, this is harnessed masculinity. This is understanding what God wants us to be as men in the home. Doesn't mean you give up your headship. What the woman wants is for you to be a good leader and to take care of her. Those aren't contradictory thoughts or concepts. So honor the woman, for she's this sensitive vessel. She's a joint heir of the grace of life. And she's a woman. And she's the one that will respond to your needs if you will simply love her like Christ loved the church. Okay. Any thoughts about that? Does that make sense? Let's turn to the questions. I gave you some questions about this. The first one has to do with how do we restore proper balance? I mean, how many lessons have you heard on wives being subjection to your husbands versus husbands love your wives? Probably with Jeff here, you've got about a 50-50 balance would be my guess. But I don't know. But how do we restore balance in this, do you think? By the way, do you think that a woman who really feels honored, do you think she's going to have a hard time being submissive toward a husband like that? See, you got to do both. If you're really honoring your wife, she doesn't mind being submissive. One of my goals is I want to be the head of my house, but I want to be the kind of head that my wife doesn't mind me being the head of the house, if you know what I mean. She doesn't feel this number. How do you think we can restore this balance? Any thoughts? Okay. Andrew says just being Christ-like and trying to demonstrate that and not feeling like this is a tug of war between the two, but they're just both go together and needs to be taught in that way. Sometimes when I do a marriage seminar, I'll have a lesson on wives being submission to your husbands. I call it the gift of submission. And then I always want to have honor the woman right next to it because the two go together really well. Yes, sir. Do you have your hand up?
Yes, I think contrary to what society says that men and women are the same. Men, a woman can do anything a man can do, a man can do anything a woman can do. And that's not true. I mean, in generalities, we're different.
Yes, very. Yeah, and remind her of that and thank her for that. You know, one of the things my wife's really good at is she still thanks me for taking out the trash and the barrels and stuff that I've done for over 40 years. It's just my job in the house. I said, you don't have to thank me for that. She goes, you don't have to thank me for dinner every time either, but you do that. So she goes, I just want you to know I appreciate it. I said, okay, I mean, so be thankful for what the other party does. And that's a good observation, good thought. So important. Any other thoughts about that? Certainly in our public teaching, we need to balance those two out, I think, in an appropriate manner. Where does your wife feel she fits into your priorities? You might want to go home and ask her that. Back in the early 80s, a long time ago, I was really busy teaching at Florida College and had a very demanding local work and was holding meetings and doing personal work. And, you know, it was all good stuff, but I didn't realize it. But there were times where my wife was feeling neglected. And so I was starting to feel her kind of pull back from me a little bit. I didn't know why. And so I actually went to a marriage counselor and I told him what was going on and said, "What do you think?" And he listened and he goes, "I want you to go home and ask your wife where she fits in your priorities." I said, "Second only to God." And I go, "I didn't ask you to tell me where she fits." I said, "I want you to ask her how she feels about where she fits." I said, "Okay." So I was really surprised. I went home and I said, "Gail, where do you think I fit in your priorities?" She goes, "Third, fourth, or fifth, if I'm lucky." I said, "What?" And she started giving me some examples. And somebody would call last minute, need help, need a Bible study, something was going on. I mean, we were all involved in acts of service, but she goes, "Do you know how many times we have things planned that gets canceled because of a last-minute call from someone at church? Couldn't you cancel them and say, 'No, I'm busy, I've already got time, I've already got another appointment?'" I said, "I thought you wanted me to do that." She goes, "You can do it some, but you do it too much." I said, "Okay." I mean, she gave me lots of examples. And she was feeling like she was always getting bumped. So I made an announcement to the church. I said, "You know what? Friday night is going to be our date night. And unless it's an emergency, please don't bother us because I'm going to be out with my wife." And they took that really well. And I began to learn the importance of making sure there were times where she understood that our time was important too. And how your wife answers that question, where does she fit in those priorities, really important to your relationship. And I think if I ask her now, she'd say second only to God. And that's what you all want in the marriage. Anybody else? Do you give your wife the benefit of the doubt and put her actions in the best light possible as a way to show love? To most women, the little things are the big things, as we talked about. Let's close with this. What are some meaningful things that you do for your wife that you don't mind sharing that helps create this closeness and bond in your marriage? Anybody got something that's an act of courage? Yes, sir. So you either buy her or surprise her with one of her favorite drinks. Okay, so it sounds like, Gail, your wife's about unsweetened iced tea and my wife's about coffee. Okay, anybody else? Yes, sir. Oh, isn't that interesting? That's what they call meta communication. You have to read between the lines. Yes, Brother Lopez.
The last few months have been a morning cup of tea in bed.
Okay.
That's the first thing I did.
Good for you. Good for you. Anybody else? Yes. Are you married? How old are you?
I'm 20.
20. Okay. 3 weeks. Congratulations. So you're on your honeymoon. Yeah, I know. My wife's the same way. She says, when you notice the trash is getting full and you empty it without me having to ask, he says, that's a big deposit in the love bank. So, yeah, that's wise, Joel. So you're still on your honeymoon. Keep that up. Good for you. Yes.
The rule that's always worked for me is to remember if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Yeah, yeah. Happy wife, happy life, right? A lot of truth in that. Anybody have any kind of fun little games or rituals that's just kind of special between the two of you? I think that sometimes can create a bond. When we first were married, you know, we'd say, oh, happy 1 month anniversary. Happy 2 month anniversary. And then we got to a year, happy year anniversary. Well, after that, most couples stop, right? Well, every single month on August 19th, we have a little game as to who can say happy anniversary on the 19th before the other. Sometimes I win, sometimes she wins. If I'm out of town, she sometimes will call me first thing in the morning. I know it's her, and then I try to say it. We say it together, and sometimes we wind up having a tie. But just think about that. You know, we would go happy 25-month anniversary, happy 35th-month anniversary. We have never missed a monthly anniversary. And it's just kind of a little fun game we play between the two of us. And so those are just sort of the little things that maybe sound silly, but it helps create a bond. It's the way you honor your relationship. Yes?
Everything you said, it all comes back down to communication.
Yes, sir.
And if you have equal communication, if you're telling each other what you feel, Jeff and I were talking about this a couple of hours ago, and it can be truly detrimental if you're like this.
Yep. And by the way, the most intimate thing you can do in your marriage relationship is to pray together. And that's where you really find what's on each other's heart. And you may not be in a situation where you have your wife pray with you, but I think in private that's very much in order. She doesn't lead in public prayers, but she can teach you something in private. She can pray with you in private. I love to hear my wife pray. And sometimes we'll get done with a prayer and it leads to a long conversation because I'll think, I didn't know that was bothering you. Or, really? I didn't know you had that on your heart. I really think that's true. The most intimate thing you can do is meaningfully pray together. It's a way you can honor God and honor the relationship. Okay, well, our time is up. I really want to thank everybody for coming. And I appreciate the good leadership here. Yes? Amen. That is so important, all the interconnections in the family. In fact, you know, the very fact that the wife is respectful and submissive to the husband, and that's modeled before the children, it helps the children to be respectful and submissive to the parents. And so it goes around in so many different ways. And exactly right, a husband and wife that models love and what a good marriage is all about will help the children immensely for them to have a good marriage. And that's one of the most important things you can do, is not neglect the marriage because you're spending so much time with the kids. The kids need to see a good marriage. And that's got to be in a priority as well. So very good observation. I want to thank you for all your work in putting this together. And we had quite a lot of conversation and really enjoyed getting to know Adam. It's always a pleasure to connect with the Kleinwood congregation. You know, Paul said of Onesiphorus, he said that his Onesiphorus came to visit him in prison, and he said, he refreshed my spirit. And anytime I visit with Kleinwood, my spirit is always refreshed, and I want to thank you for that. And I'd like for you to pray for our work at Kirkland, and we'll continue to pray for the work here at Kleinwood. And if you're interested in some further resources on the family and other subjects, we have a YouTube channel. Just put in Kirkland Church of Christ, and a whole lot of different videos will pop up if you're interested. And remember my encouragement for you to come and visit us if you're in the area. Love to see you. Rest in his promises. Go where he bids you. Faithful be found. Every good wish for every good thing. Until our paths meet again. You want to lead us in a closing prayer? Let's bow our heads for prayer, please.